This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
I could actually, I don't have an iPod, but I think if I had an iPod, I could put this song on the iPod just to listen to it occasionally.
What is this song from?
It's the Waltons.
Oh gosh,
I'm such a nerd because I really like the song. I really like the show.
It's a cool song.
I like the show. I like the song.
I kept thinking it was a Western. It's not really a Western.
No, it's the Waltons.
It was that banjo that got me.
Rick Britton joins us in studio, local author, historian, cartographer online at rickbritton.com. And he joins us every Friday to talk history. And I've gotten emails from folks. There's a lot of folks out there who actually really very much look forward to you coming on the program. When are you having Rick
great.
Back?
Oh, yeah. That's great.
So where are we today? I know you've got a quiz, right?
We had a good time with the quiz, so we've got a quiz. One of the many hats that I wear is editor of the magazine of Albemarle County History down at the Historical Society, and we're going to talk about that in a moment. But the lead-off article in the magazine, this year's magazine, is about the Convention Army, the folks that surrendered, the army under Gentleman Johnny Burgoyne that surrendered at Saratoga in the American Revolution, and they were marched 600 miles down here and stayed for a couple of years. They were quartered at a place northwest of town. So this is an army of 4,500 prisoners of war that stayed here in Charlottesville. A lot of folks know about this. And I've heard you, Coy, say many times that history is not just people. It's also brick. It's also the trees. It's also graveyards. It's also, well, history is also place names. And the presence of these men here, British and Germans, left at least two place names on the map here in Albemarle County. They're commonly known and from their stay here as prisoners of war. And the question is, give me one of those two. Two come to my mind immediately. They're commonly known either names of roads or names of subdevelopments.
So if anybody out there has any idea, it's 977-1070, and we will give you lunch for two to Mickey Tavern or a free large two-topping Domino's pizza. And I actually really like Domino's, too. I like the Waltons, and I like Domino's.
Domino's is good.
Yeah.
Domino's is real
people
good.
People sort of laugh at me. You like Domino's? I actually do. So we got that to give away, 977-1070. So during the Revolutionary War, the American soldiers captured a bunch of British and German mercenaries, who are fighting with the British.
That's right.
And they caught them in New York, forced them down here to Albemarle County.
Well, you know what? The story is even more convoluted than that. At first, the reason they were called the Convention Army is because the Articles of Convention, in other words, the surrender terms, the agreement was that they would be sent back to England and Germany as long as they promised that they would not get involved in the war again. Okay? So that sounded okay for a while, and then Congress realized, wait a minute, if we send them back to England and or Germany, that frees up other troops for the British to send against us. So Congress reneged on the surrender agreement. So at first these guys were going home, and they stayed in Boston for a while. These guys were going home. They thought for sure. Then all of a sudden they say, nope, we're going to get you away from the theater of war. We're going to march you 600 miles to Charlottesville, Virginia. And they went, what? Where?
And the fact that these guys
Charlottesville where?
Were kept prisoners of war here
right.
during the Revolutionary War has led to two place names
right that still here remain.
That reflect that history. So let's go
Absolutely.
To the phone.
Absolutely.
Anne is on the phone. Anne, thanks for the call. Do you have any idea what we're talking about?
I'm probably maybe completely wrong, but Hessian Hill.
Oh! Absolutely. That's one. Good
is
job.
It, I mean,
it is.
Right?
Absolutely. We were talking about the Germans, and I didn't want to give it away by saying Hessians, because that everybody would think, oh, Hessian Hills, of
Way
course.
To go, Anne. Rock on. How'd you know that?
From history.
There you go.
I've been here in the area for a long time.
Now, are you a native?
No, I'm from Colorado originally, but I married a native Virginian.
And you moved here when?
1961.
There you go.
You're now a native, though.
Absolutely.
Barracks Road Shopping Center was brand new.
Yes.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. Well, it wasn't even here.
And hold on just one. Oh, okay. By the way, you want Domino's or you want Mickey Tavern?
Oh, Mickey Tavern.
All right. Well, hold on just 1 minute. And Matt's going to hook you up. Matt, she's on line one, and we'll hook her up with some Mickey Tavern. There is one more road name. Beth is on line two. Beth, you know the road name that reflects this history from the Revolutionary War?
I think it's Berks Road.
Absolutely.
Hey,
exactly right. Good job.
And
the barracks was where they were quartered. I almost said it giving the description, but I avoided doing that.
So Beth, how did you know that?
Well, actually, because of my dad. We're natives here, and he's told me this story lots of times. And we grew up, actually, in Hessian Hills.
Oh, well, there you go. Barracks Road was the road that led
out to the barracks
where all these soldiers were kept.
Exactly.
And
mm-hmm.
how many, Rick, were there?
4,500.
Wow.
Yeah, it doubled the size of the local population. Scared everybody to death.
I guess so.
Yeah.
But they never caused any trouble while they were here.
They didn't cause any trouble. The main problem was the drain on the local foodstuffs, and they denuded the forest. For out like 6 miles.
Denuded, that's an SAT word, I don't know.
They cut down all the trees.
Oh.
Sorry.
But who cut them down?
They did.
They needed
all this firewood. They had to finish building their cabins. And then, you know, they were here for a couple of years, so they needed all this firewood. So for a while, the forests were just, you know.
If you drive out Berks Road, where would that have been?
You go out Berks Road about a mile and a half and on the right-hand side. Out in there.
So it's not that far,
but from the city of Charlottesville, the original part of Charlottesville, it was a ways in those days. It's about 6 miles from Charlottesville.
Congratulations. Hey, Beth, you want Domino's Pizza or Mickey Tavern?
We'll take Domino's, please.
All right.
Good job.
I like to hear that. Hold on just 1 second. And Matt, Beth is online, too. If you could give her some Domino's, we'll hook her up. It's Friday, so Rick Britton is in studio talking history, and Margo has been waiting incredibly patiently online. Margo, you're the best. Thanks so much.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very good. Happy Friday to you.
Good. I happen to be reading, actually, the book Alexander Hamilton, A Life by Willard Stern Randall. And actually, it was really interesting because it's covered what Rick Britton's talking about. And Alexander Hamilton drafted what was called a treaty and convention of for the exchange and accommodation of prisoners of war.
Right.
And it became a model for future prisoner exchanges. Is that still in practice or in use today, or was it just for that time?
Wow, that's a real good question. My military expertise pertains mostly to the Revolution and the Civil War, so we would need a modern military person to answer that. So you've stumped me on that one.
Oh, yeah. Okay. But the question I have.
But it was incredibly liberal.
Pardon?
It was incredibly liberal, and that was the problem. That's the reason Congress decided to renege. I mean, letting these guys just go home, and then therefore the British could replace them with somebody else was a little bit too liberal.
Mm-hmm.
So they decided to renege.
Surprising to see liberal policy coming from Hamilton.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I guess among
its principles were principles and numerical values for exchange.
Right. And that's still done. For example, you know, a general might be worth 100 privates mm-hmm. in the exchange mm-hmm. and things like that. I know that's still done. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, the question I have for you was, I'm sure that these prisoners, all 4,000 some hundred of them,
uh-huh.
Were not that closely guarded.
They now, weren't.
From what I had understood, some of them helped the farmers in the area, and I'm wondering how many did escape and just kind
of... A lot escaped. And the British prisoners that escaped, hundreds of them, a lot of them made it back to New York. To Clinton's main army, the main British army at the time. They made it back to New York. The Germans, however, tended to stay. And that's one of the reasons we have so many German place names, especially in the Shenandoah Valley, and so many people of German descent today, is because a lot of the Hessians stayed.
They saw the country and decided,
Exactly.
like the rest of us.
Why go back home? I mean, they were mercenaries. They were making only a little bit of money. But out west, there was all kinds of opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And land. Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you so much for the call. Would you like to go to take a friend to Mickey Tavern?
Actually, I already got that.
Oh, you did.
but I could do another because I have a couple more friends that would enjoy joining.
Well, I don't
me.
Want anybody to call today and not go home empty-handed. So hold on just a minute.
Okay.
And Matt will hook you up. Matt, she's on line one. Matt will hook her up with lunch for two. To Mickey Tavern, and that's the rule today. It's Friday, so everybody gets something. If They participate in the conversation. So what's
great.
What's the latest with the trips? Because I know you have a lot planned with that.
Yeah, I just wanted to tell everybody, one of the other hats I wear is organizing these trips for the great folks down at the Charlottesville Senior Center. And next week is our trip to Stratford Hall, the birthplace of Robert E. Lee. I'm going to give a presentation on the bus on the way up, so that'll cut down on the travel time. We have a nice Q&A and a presentation on the bus. So that's Wednesday, May 23rd. Then next month, and we'll talk about this some more, you know, on future visits here. June 28th, we're going to Shirley Plantation on the James below Richmond. And then
Who lived there?
What's that?
Who lived there?
The Hill Carter family. And surprisingly, after all these years, it's one of the first plantations established up the James River below Richmond. It's still in the same family, which is really amazing.
That's amazing. And what plantation?
After so many years. That's Shirley Plantation.
Shirley, you can't be serious. I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
And then the White House of the Confederacy in Richmond, a great place to visit. Some great tours. Oatlands Plantation in Northern Virginia, and then Kenmore in Fredericksburg. So we got some great... great trips coming up. If you want some more information, you can call the folks at the travel office at the Senior Center, 974-6538. And there's a lot of information posted at the website, and that's www.seniorcenterinc.org.
And the phone number again is 974-6538 if you would like to join Rick Britton on some of the tours of the historic estates here in Virginia. And you'll be doing that throughout the summer, right?
Throughout the summer into the early fall.
Very
yeah.
cool. And Stratford Hall you know what I love about Stratford Hall is it's so not only is it incredibly remote.
Right.
I mean, it's like you hit Fredericksburg and keep driving. I mean, way out on the...
it's a ways.
That's the northern neck or the middle?
It is the northern neck.
The northern neck.
Uh-huh.
It looks so different. I mean, it screams 17th century.
Yeah. It was built between 1730 and 1738. Yeah. It's really early.
Yeah. And it just doesn't look like older Virginia homes that you would think.
No, it's definitely English. It's almost medieval. But just think about this. It was completed before Jefferson was born.
Wow.
You know, so that's a long time ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's a ways.
It's a beautiful place up there. So you folks take advantage of that. 974-6538.
One of the other things we wanted to talk about today, the main thing, is the magazine. I'm all excited about this because, you know, it's a magazine, but it's really a book. I mean, it's 120 pages. So every time you...
That's like a little paperback.
By the time I finish working on this, it becomes my baby. And I know you understand this, working on something for a long time. And so I'm really proud of this. So the first article... I mentioned this earlier, is about the Convention Army, the Hessians and the Germans, but in particular, and this is what I find so fascinating, in particular, it's a friendship that developed and lasted for 20-some-odd years between Thomas Jefferson and one of the Hessian prisoners who was an officer. One of the things that's fascinating about this, it was a totally different time. Jefferson was governor at the time, but... they were allowed, the officers, the British and the Hessian officers, were allowed to stay in other places. And so the lead Hessian officer, his name was von Redesel, and his wife and his family and his staff, so all the staff officers, they were allowed to go off because they had money. They were allowed to go off and, you know, find quarters elsewhere. And so they ended up renting from Filippo Mazzai, who was Jefferson's vintner at the time. At Colley, which is on the other side of Monticello Mountain, they rented that estate. And so Jefferson became really friendly, and, you know, he liked people who were cultured, of course. We know that about him. And many of the staff officers had expertise in areas that he admired. So this one guy, and the article is about the friendship that developed between Jefferson and Baron Frederick Wilhelm von Geismar. Geismar was a violinist, which Jefferson admired.
Yeah, that was my next question. What did he like about this German?
He was a violinist, and he played chess. And he was a good chess player, and he was a great conversationalist. And this man was from a place that Jefferson had never been, and so that immediately piqued Jefferson's interest.
Yeah,
so
there
were all kinds of entertainments that went on at Monticello, you know, for these enemy officers. Now, think about this. This would never happen. Well, it would so rarely happen today. It
interesting
was
that the guy was here fighting, you know, in this far off colony,
right?
And brought his wife with him and his family with
now
him.
Now that's
and
the
staff.
General. That's von Redesel brought his family and his staff.
Okay,
right. Von Geismar was not here with his family,
okay.
but still, it's amazing, and it gives you an idea of kind of the gentleman nature. You know, even though the war was brutal, I don't want to give people the wrong idea. It was a brutal conflict. but the kind of gentleman nature that here the governor of the state these people were prisoners in is entertaining these men and having, you know, polite conversation,
lavish parties, know,
in the parlor at Monticello. So that this friendship between the two of them lasted for 20 some odd years, so much so they corresponded after the war, that when Jefferson was in Hanau, which is where this guy lived, went back after the war, he visited Geismar, and then Geismar kind of, you know, took him around town and showed him the sights.
Wow.
So it's really kind of neat.
That
it's
is cool.
And this story is in the next edition of the Albemarle...
The Magazine of Albemarle County History, M-A-C-H, Magazine of Albemarle County...
Which folks can get how?
They can get it down at the Historical Society. It just went to the printers. I just signed off on the last proof.
So we're getting
today.
A sneak peek here at the next
issue. It'll be here in about 3 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah, so you can call down at
And how much is it?
It's $10, but it's really worth it. It's 120 pages, there's some great stories. Now, that one is called a Transatlantic Friendship. Then there's another story. It's about Jefferson and the Jefferson family, too, that's not quite so happy. His youngest granddaughter, Anne Carey Randolph, the firstborn to his eldest daughter, married a gentleman by the name of Charles Bankhead. And Bankhead, unfortunately, was an alcoholic and a wife beater. And so this is a tragic story about the poor fate of Anne Carey Randolph Bankhead. The name of this story is Seeking Refuge at Monticello, Domestic Violence in Thomas Jefferson's Family. And so it's written by women who are in the nursing profession and teaching at the University of Virginia. So it's a fascinating story from a woman's point of view.
I've never heard anything about this.
Yeah.
This is really amazing.
It's a pretty sad story, and it erupted into physical violence, so much so that Anne Carey Randolph's younger brother, TJ, or Jeff Randolph, ended up confronting him in front of the courthouse in downtown Charlottesville, and Bankhead actually stabbed Randolph, one of Jefferson's grandsons. It was a huge stink at the time. No, he didn't kill him, but people were seriously worried at the time that TJ Randolph would lose the use of one of his hands because he had severed.
What happened with Bankhead? Did he go to jail?
Had severed an artery. He did briefly, and sadly, I don't want to give away the entire story.
You got to get the book and read it.
You have to read it, and that's a great story. Seeking Refuge at Monticello.
Very cool.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And then there's another one about the Civil War, but the Civil War and how it changed the University of Virginia. So I know you know quite a bit about this. A lot of recent historians have written about how, you know, the University of Virginia was able to continue through the Civil War. There wasn't that much change. And this is an article by a recent graduate. In fact, he's graduating this weekend. And for a young fellow, Alexander Blanchard, this is really well written. It's called Dispelling the Myth of Continuity, Change at the University of Virginia During the Civil War. And I know you can think of a number of ways that the university was changed by the Civil War. But one of the facts that he dug up that I hadn't realized was this. At the outbreak of the Civil War, there was a little over 600 students at the university. Okay. In the 4 years of war, okay, the university admitted only 300. So from 600 at one time to 300 over 4 years, the fact is the University of Virginia almost closed its doors.
Yeah.
The University of Virginia almost went away.
And at one point, didn't they get down to like less than 60 students?
Yes, I mean, they
which
did.
Was
yes, they
basically
did.
How many were here in March of 1825 when it started.
Exactly.
They basically went back to the original numbers.
Exactly. And now I didn't realize until reading this article, you know, and of course editing it, what a drastic effect the Civil War had on. And of course, we've talked about, one, the establishment of the hospital, the Charlottesville General Hospital at the university. So all of a sudden, there were all these wounded soldiers. But also, at one point, the majority of people studying at the university were wounded Confederate soldiers, many of them on crutches, many of them, you know, without arms and legs. I mean, not totally, but, you know, missing an arm, missing a leg.
Right, right.
So the image of the University of Virginia during the Civil War, once you read this, I think your image will be changed.
I remember reading a student diary or letter from that period where they wrote that one of the most haunting sounds at the university at that time, besides the cries of pain and anguish, because so many of the rooms on the lawn and the ranges were used for injured soldiers, besides the cries of anguish and pain, one of the most haunting sounds during the Civil War at the university was the echo of pegs like crutches and right. pegs echoing down the arcades.
Right.
You would just hear this, you know, as this young man tried to walk
right.
on a peg leg or with crutches,
right.
tried to maneuver down the arcades, and that sound of the peg hitting the concrete pavement sort of echoing down the arcades was... It just gives you chills to think about, you know?
Yeah. One of the moving stories is about these two Confederate veterans. One of them was on crutches, George L. Christian, and his roommate, and they stayed in one of the lawn rooms. His roommate was William C. Holmes. Holmes had been wounded so badly that he couldn't take notes. So Christian, they were both studying law. Christian took the notes and then shared them with Holmes. And Christian had trouble walking, so Holmes helped him walk. Now, the two of these guys came back from the Army, and all they had with them was the clothing that they wore, the military uniforms that they wore, and the blankets. And so that was the sum total of their personal effects. Now, the reason they were here, the reason they were able to study, is Virginia passed a law that Confederate veterans could study for free at the university. So that's the only reason they were able to get in. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been able to afford it.
Wow.
So here are these two guys basically sleeping on the floor, sharing their Army blankets in their Army uniforms.
Struggling just to get to class and then taking notes. And, oh, man.
Yeah, there's some great stories in here.
And, of course, all of that is in one of the articles in this next issue of the magazine.
Dispelling the Myth of Continuity. And the last one, and almost my favorite one, although I'd be hard-pressed to pick my favorite, the last one, and it's a great story, not that much is known about this, it's called Learning in the Charlottesville Freedmen School, the First Jefferson School. It's about the school on West Main Street that was established by the New England Freedmen's Aid Society. It was actually established by the teachers sent down from Massachusetts to teach the newly freed African Americans right after the Civil War. And that's a really fascinating and heartrending story about how these young students, and they're not actually all young, some of them were in their 60s, how these newly freed African Americans struggled, you know, to obtain an education right after they were freed from
slavery.
Wouldn't
that be a great movie?
actually, it would be a great movie.
Really good, because you know it probably wasn't safe. Really, for them to get up and attend this school.
No, it still wasn't safe.
Yeah.
You know? But so, luckily, I mean, here on West Main Street, it was right down by Union Station. In fact, where the Black Baptist Church is on West Main Street, it was right there. But luckily, here in Charlottesville, there were no attacks on the school. But I'm sure other freedmen's schools and other places were attacked after the war.
Wow. So this article is all about that.
Right. It's called Learning in the Charlottesville Freedmen School, the First Jefferson School.
And this new issue of the Historical Society magazine will be available in about 3 weeks.
In about 3 weeks. I'll let everybody know as soon as it comes out.
Cool. Yeah. Well, let's get a preview of what we're going to talk about next week. I know you wanted to talk about Gettysburg, right?
Yeah. We'll talk a little bit more about the local fellas, Charlottesville and Albemarle Civil War soldiers at the Battle of Gettysburg.
Very cool. So
yeah.
The folks from here who went up and fought in that battle.
Yeah.
Rick Britton, local author, historian, cartographer, and he's online at rickbritton.com. Rick, it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Have
Thanks
a
for
great
having me.
Week, and we'll
yeah,
see you,
too.
See you next week.
Yeah.
You've been listening to WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. The show can be heard every Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 o'clock on News Radio 1070 WINA. This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at SevillePodcast.com. If you enjoyed the show, why not check out our site for hours and hours of archives of Coy's show? You'll also find other radio programs, arts features, public affairs coverage, and more.